Disposable Heroes Podcast is proudly brought to you by Iconic Farms. Enjoy the high. Life is a series of moments, a constant ebbing and flow of contrasting seasons. At Iconic Farms, they understand that the seasons come with highs and lows. Although the lows do serve their purpose as a time to plant seeds of new growth, we thrive for the moments of harvest. The moments where ordinary places, ideas, and people become extraordinary. Their hope is that the seeds they plant inspire you to envision and find your higher state of being. Whether it be in the mountains, the ocean, or under a vast array of stars, when it comes to you, you'll know. Enjoy the high. Check them out at iconicfarms.com. The fam is real. Hoorah!
This episode of Disposable Heroes is brought to you by Skivvy Premium Essentials, home of the world's most comfortable boxer briefs, undershirts, and socks. Use promo code DISPOSABLE15 at skvi.com for 15% off your first order. Or take the leap on a recurring subscription and get 25% off every single order you make. We're at NAMM today eating tea tree toothpicks with Ash Zone, whose career spans over 25 years with highlights like playing Woodstock 94, the 2012 Olympics opening ceremony, and laying down solid drum tracks on 56 top 10 albums, 18 top 10 singles, and 28 number one albums, including the tastiest drum fill I've ever heard on the Adele song He Won't Go, heard here. That's comfortable. It's breathing, you know? Speaking of comfort and breathability, head on over to skvi.com and get yourself a pack or two of the most comfortable and breathable boxer briefs on the market. And don't forget to use promo code DISPOSABLE15 for 15% off your first order. If you order right now, my guys will pack and ship your stuff before the episode's even over. I can almost guarantee that. And now, enjoy the episode.
Right then.
All right.
How's that?
Brother Ash. Thank you so much for joining the show.
Oh, man, absolute pleasure. It's so cool to be on it.
Actually, first, do we want to start off with another tea tree toothpick?
Nice. So if your ear is chomping away, you know what's going on.
The tea tree toothpicks are absolutely glorious. So thank you so much again. I'm a huge fan. I actually first found out about you through your reggae drumming.
Wow, that's cool.
And then I kind of did my research and found out about everything else, even to the point where Matt Griner told me you have a pig.
That's right.
Yeah.
I had a few pigs, but now I only have one, and she's getting old, but yeah.
Kaleo from my band had a pig back in like 2006 or something. He bought one. It was supposed to be a little mini pig.
And it
grew to about 120 pounds.
Yeah.
And kind of not the nicest pig. It loved Kaleo and his wife. But it kind of wasn't.
Oh, they can be moody.
Yeah, well, they're so smart, that's why.
They're so smart.
Yeah.
And mine, without a shadow of a doubt, is a million times brighter than my dog.
Really?
Yep.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, really smart.
Well, I mean, they sniff out truffles and whatnot. So it's like, I mean, they're pretty damn smart to find things under the ground,
well,
right?
It's so smart, in fact, that a couple of times I've thought, we shouldn't be eating these things.
Yeah,
but
I know.
They taste so great. So sorry to all the vegans and vegetarians out there, but they are good.
Well, where I come from, Big Island of Hawaii, there's obviously, you know, the luau's, they bury the pig in the emu pit.
Right.
Which is the, like, underground oven that they use with lava rocks and everything.
Cook.
Yeah, so, yeah, the kalua pig is one of the dishes.
Yeah.
It's like a slow-cooked pulled pork. So, yeah, the delicacy of pigs is huge in Hawaii, for sure.
So now we've alienated all the vegetarian drummers of America are now switching off.
Yeah.
So it's just the meat eaters out there now.
Yeah. I know. It's a thing these days. So back to the reggae drumming.
Yeah.
So you, I've listened to some interviews before, and you refer to yourself as a pop drummer, no?
Yeah, well, I mean, that's predominantly what I've done all my life.
Fair
enough. What I do now, you know, but I've... But in doing that job, you need to be aware of, you know, many different genres.
Yeah.
And reggae is something that comes up, you know. Always with pop music, it seems that, you know, someone will go, it's like a reggae groove, right? And you go, okay. And if you do an absolutely proper reggae groove, they go, oh, no, not that. So you have to sort of make a poppier version of everything you do.
Gotcha.
So someone will say, it's like a producer might say, it's got like a sort of swing feel, and you play a real jazz swing feel. They go, oh, no, not that, you know. So you've got to be aware of all the genres, and then I kind of sort of got to popify them.
Right.
If you know what I mean.
Well, sorry to cut you off, but even that Jonas Brothers song that came out recently has a reggae feel to
right.
it. But, like, it's a more of a straight forward kind of rock groove to it.
Yeah.
With the reggae guitar skank.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So, like, a little taste of that feel. And, like, your band, I mean, you know, actually, you are one of the stuff that I've listened to, you know, with Pepper.
Yeah.
So far, because you've only just introduced me to your band yesterday.
Yeah. Honored, by the way.
Oh, man, it's mega. I love it. You know, there's obviously reggae's at the root of it.
Right.
But you're also, there's rock in there, there's funk in there, all sorts of stuff.
Right.
I'm a massive fan of that feel, you know.
Yeah, totally.
And I was very lucky, like we talked about yesterday, when I moved to London, I met a really great bass player, a guy called Winston Blissett, who plays with a British band called Massive Attack.
Okay, right.
And he's not from Jamaica, but he's from one of the islands. Absolutely very, very qualified to talk about reggae.
Right.
And he basically showed me the sort of basics of reggae drumming when I was in my very early 20s.
Those were the two fills you were talking about.
He said you only need two fills, and he showed me the two. And essentially, maybe I could sing them. One went... cat, 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 right?
Yep.
That's one. And he said, and I'll show you the second one. He goes, cat, 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 cat. He just sounded like that.
Nice. And on the swoop?
Yeah. And I was like, well, that's the same. Okay, it's the same film with it.
Yeah.
Mega. Funny as hell. But, and I mean, he's, in a way, he's kind of right.
Right.
You know, it's about the feel.
Absolutely.
A lot of the things that I really love are, you know.
But do you think, I mean, all that was because they were technically untrained musicians that came up with that feel from Jamaica, from Kingston and Jamaica. The music school that the Abyssinians went to back in the 50s or whatever. Like, I don't think they're probably traditionally trained is what I'm trying to say. So that led to that, you know, necessity is... where brilliance is born sometimes, you know?
It's just a feeling that's translated onto the drums.
Yeah.
Like, brilliant.
So how was your, path growing up in England with reggae? Because obviously, being from Hawaii, UB40 is basically like the Rolling Stones in Hawaii in the 80s growing up. They were massive.
In fact, that's a classic example of pop reggae, really.
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, they took Labor of Love, they took all the pop songs that were their favorite songs.
Yeah.
Neil Diamond songs, all these songs, turned them into pop reggae songs. Just made them reggae. They're already pop songs.
So there's a lot of that. And London, you know, still is. And when I'm very proud of it, we are, hopefully, most people are very proud of the diversity of London and the UK.
Yeah.
You know, many mixtures of races and creeds and people mixing and making music and, you know, because, like, for instance, like, you know, UB40, it's quite a big band, you know, and there's a mix.
Like 120 million records sold or something?
But also as far as members are concerned, I think there's like 15 guys in the band or something weird. And it's like, it's a melting pot of styles and people and, you know, in the UK. And I think, so me growing up, I'm obviously very aware of them. I'm a massive fan of The Police.
Yep. Massive respect to Stuart Copeland. Oh,
unbelievable drummer. One of my favorites.
Yeah.
There's no question.
Me too. I always said if there was a different split of John Bonham and Stuart Copeland,
I
wonder what that would sound like.
Oh, unbelievable.
If you just split them right both down the middle, their
styles.
Wouldn't
that be good?
Yeah.
Someone's out there now thinking, hang on, I could do that.
Yeah. on YouTube.
Yeah. But yeah, Stuart's, I've been very, very fortunate to have met him and played a gig where he sat in on my drums.
Nice.
What's really beautiful about some of the best drummers I think that we've had in the world, usually their character translates onto their instrument, and Stuart is definitely like that. He's a firecracker, and then when he gets on the drums, you go, oh yeah.
Yeah.
No surprise, that's how you play, because when you know, his personality is so wonderfully effervescent, you know, and then he gets on the drums and you go, wow.
Right. Yeah, that's, it was Kenny Aronoff blew my mind when last year he told me about, he said something about, you just really got to be yourself when you're playing the drums.
Yeah.
And I don't know, I think I've never really closely related personality and drumming together until he said that.
Yeah.
And it just blew my mind.
Well, you know, like Gads, right? So Gads a very warm, kind, open, gives you space character.
Yeah.
And then you listen to his drumming and you go, oh, just like that.
Gotcha.
You know, he's listening to the rest of the musicians. He's leaving space for other people to say things.
Yeah.
It's like no surprise, really.
Right.
It's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah, no, and that's why he is who he is.
And then sometimes you get a personality that's full on and they will not stop talking, and then you hear him play the drums. Oh!
Yeah, it makes sense. Fills. I wanted to touch on what I talked about yesterday, about how you said the favorite thing is recording for you, probably, because it lives on forever. Because there's something that there's in our world of untangible art, which is music, there's actually something you can repeat and listen to, and that's why you love it. Yeah. Which to me was the most unselfish thing I'd ever heard someone in music say. So
very kind,
so rad.
Cool,
but
man.
But yeah, can you talk a little more about that?
The way I feel about it. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, I love playing live. I still do, and I just thought about, you know, there's something very cool about doing a performance that's it. It's done. And that's you done. It's there forever, hopefully. And, you know, that happens on every recording that everyone does. But if you, like, imagine if you played on, I don't know, imagine if you played on Imagine by John Lennon, you know.
Yeah.
And that drummer is a guy called Alan White, a British drummer that plays in Yes. And he's still around, and he must listen to that. He must walk into like a coffee shop and hear himself playing, and it's like, wow.
Yeah.
Heavy.
Yeah, totally.
You know?
So it's surreal, right?
Yeah.
Absolutely surreal. How surreal is it for you to be, you said you just hit 50 years old?
I just turned 50.
I just turned 40. So I was born.
It's good, isn't it?
Yeah, I was born in 79.
I remember 40 just about.
Yeah, I'm loving it, but how surreal is it to be absolutely peaking going into your 50s?
It's odd, you know, and I did pacing last year, which was a big deal for me, you know, being a British drummer to close the first day, and you know, it's heavy. Jimmy Chamberlain was there, Darryl Jones, then all the Zildjian family were at the side of the stage, and all the guys from Vic and Gretsch. It was like, so that alone was a heavy thing to play in front of them. And then an amazing amount of people turned up, like over 1,000 people turned up to watch me play. And I was thinking about, I definitely remember in my 20s thinking, will I still be playing even at 50 years old?
Yeah.
And like you've just said, I mean, I actually got overwhelmed at PACIC by the love that I got back from the room. It overwhelmed me at one point, you know, emotionally, in a good way, you know. I can't believe it quite, that I'm enjoying almost like a renaissance, you know, like it's crazy, like I'm having another wave of success and love and stuff. It's madness, really.
Right. And I would assume it's, speaking of recording living on forever, that feeling that you got from that, and I'm sure a million other things you've done, lives on, because when you talk about it, it's like, I mean, I get the chicken skin. I'm like, you know, like the goosebumps. It's amazing to even keep reliving it, because it's such the magic lives on, I guess, is what I'm trying to say, you know?
Yeah, hopefully.
What's up?
Hopefully it's magic, we do, and you know, I guess, and that's, you know, that's an interesting, when I record, I think like that when I'm playing. I'm like, okay, this is going down, and it's going to stay, you know.
Yeah.
And you can't go back and change it.
No, you got to live with it forever.
Yeah. Excuse me. Yeah.
Well, speaking of magic, you recorded, I think, a rock record with the bell brass snare that was from Nirvana.
That's right.
From the Nevermind record?
Yeah, because that was in L.A. I recorded that.
Vex Red was
Vex
the band?
Vex Red, have you heard it?
Yeah, I listened to it from knowing what, like your journey, I ran into it.
The listeners, if they listen, it's Vex Red, and the album is a long title. It's called Start With a Strong and Persistent Desire. And it was produced by a by the guy that produced Korn back in the day in Slipknot, a guy called Ross Robinson.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And we recorded it in Venice Beach. There's a studio just off the beach there, near where Ross lives.
Okay.
And the people that supplied the drums were the drum doctors.
Okay, yeah, yeah.
And at the time, I don't know if he does it now, but the snare drums that turned up for me to play with this bell brass thing, a lovely piccolo, I can't remember what that was made out of. Anyway, the guy turns up, and I've been playing this bell brass, and I said, can I buy it? And he just, like, belly laughed for about 15 minutes. And I said, what's up? And he went, nah, man. He goes, you want to know the history of the snare drum? I was like, yeah, go on. And he said, it's the snare drum that Dave used on Nevermind.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, my God.
Yeah.
And he said, you know, and then it's been on so many other massive records with other drummers.
Yeah, the drum doctors,
Chad Smith's played it on records and blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I can never sell this. It's, you know, and actually, he's probably not hiring it out now because it's a legendary drum.
Keep that, gotta keep that thing in a museum, or at least a personal museum.
Yeah, and the other snare drum that I used, the side snare, higher thing, was used by Chad. So, you know, and actually, funny enough, that was a Gretsch kit, a big Gretsch kit that I played.
Oh, really?
Yeah, mega sounding drums.
24-inch kick?
Yeah.
Nice. I don't want to keep you forever, but last thing I want to talk about, Windmill Studios, because obviously you have in the drum world, a very famous Instagram, and all the grooves and the shit you play there. But let's just talk about Windmill Studios for a second. It's like essentially a circular barn.
Well, it's the bottom of a windmill that was originally there. And, you know, my wife basically, there's some barns attached to our house. And we bought the house because those barns were there, old barns.
Yeah.
And we were going to convert that into a studio. Then we realized, this is actually it's quite a big space. It's going to be quite expensive. And someone just said, what about the windmill? And there were just some remains, really, of a nearly 200-year-old windmill in my field.
Right.
Like about 350, 400 yards away from my house. Just out in the field. And the brick, but the huge brick bits that you see, they were there. They would have supported like a 50-foot wooden structure with sails, you know, wind sails back in the day.
Yeah, old school.
Yeah, and so the guy he's a green build guy that we this friend of ours, and he said, look, we'll make the walls out of straw bales, and put lime render on it, put a cool roof, just use some. Reclaimed floorboards and make it cool, you know, and it was significantly cheaper than converting the barns.
Right.
But essentially, my wife said, if you don't get all your shit out of the house, I'm going to leave you. So I had to build it pretty quick.
It's all that the thing of drummers having so much goddamn equipment comes back to bite you over and over again.
I know. And the thing is, I don't know, most people, you know, I've been playing now, you know, over half my life, and it's like, well, I didn't set out to have 10 drum kits or 35 snare drums.
Right.
It just happens.
Absolutely. Like,
along the roads, you just pick up this stuff, and if you don't move it on...
Yeah, and then you think about the drum doctor, same thing with him. I'm not selling this thing, and same thing with all these snares you accumulate throughout.
I mean, early on in my career, like most guys, I did shift some gear on because I needed the money.
Any regret shifting?
Yeah, there's a Tarmo, actually, that I wish I hadn't got rid of. An Artstar 2, 14 by 8.
Gotcha.
It was great. I missed that. That's quite cool, that.
Well, hopefully it's going to good use somewhere in this world.
Someone's rocking it out somewhere.
Yeah.
And then, anyway, so the windmill, we built it, put my stuff in. I thought, well, you know, maybe I can practice there. And all my gear's in there. My wife's not going to leave me. That's good. And then someone just said, it sounds pretty cool in there, right? And I was like, yeah, I guess the straw bales, you know, it's the walls are like
big.
And it sounds wicked. Someone said, what about miking it up? Have you tried recording it? I've not even thought about that. And then we did. And then it sounded pretty cool. And I was like, well, I better invest in some gear. I bought some gear, invested a little bit of money.
Yeah.
Bought some good speakers and blah, blah, blah. And over it's been about 8 years now that I've been doing it. Over that time, I've got better as an engineer. And the business has changed also in that time,
right,
quite radically. So it's like every major city, the studios are closing.
Totally.
People are making music in a different way. A lot of pop producers are working out of laptops because they can. So therefore, they don't need studios. And it's evolved. But I'm offering people, and I think everyone out there that is, I try and encourage people to do it, because you don't need 30 grand and you need maybe $1,000 to start, a couple of microphones the room doesn't have to be Abbey Road.
Right.
You know, and you might get a cool sound. And so I encourage everyone to do it.
Yeah.
I think you have to now.
Yeah.
You know, and it's gone from me just playing around to now I'm playing on number one records. Grammy nominated records and stuff like that is coming out of the studio.
You did the Cher record there, and
a couple of Cher records there.
A couple of Cher records.
Rod Stewart recently, and I've been doing a little bit of work with Ed Sheeran.
Amazing.
Julian Lennon. I did this album that's crazy that's coming out soon, which you know about. It's
just
very close to my reggae heart.
Right.
We'll leave it at that.
Right. What other, is there any other new stuff that you can talk about that you have coming up, or?
The new stuff that's coming out.
Anything with Delamitri?
Yeah, I've got a new
touring
album. Yeah,
oh, new album?
We're going to do a new album actually when I get back.
Sick. Are you going to do that from
I might do one or two tracks there.
Oh, nice.
But not all of it. I think we'll get in a room like old school and play.
Get the energy flowing.
Yeah.
Love it.
Yeah. So, yeah, amazing. Those guys are still going. You know,
yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah, you guys tour after you make the record, maybe?
We're talking about touring at the end of next year. And really, America was the place that they had the most success. In Chicago was our biggest town, really.
Okay.
Yeah, back when all of these listeners weren't born.
Yeah, I know, right?
Yeah.
Hey, it's all full circle, it all comes around, right?
Yeah.
So hey, well, thank you so much.
Thank you, man.
Also, if anyone else wants to check you out, there's your Instagram, obviously. It's Ash Soan, ashsoan. And is there a website?
They can get to my website from there. It's ashzone.com.
Nice.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, yeah. So many mahalos, brother. And thank you again. And,
absolute pleasure.
Thanks for checking out my band. Seriously, an honor.
You are my new favorites.
Yeah. Come on. Right on, man. Disposable
cool, man.
Heroes. Signing
See you
out.
Soon.
All right.
Bye.
Thanks again so much for joining us, guys. I can't tell you what a honor and a privilege it was to talk to Ash. Guy's the sweetest guy ever, and an absolute English hammer that owns a pig and has a windmill as a studio legend. Thanks, guys. Coming up is going to be a few more from NAMM 2020. So, as always, we love you from everyone at Disposable Heroes. Enjoy the week, the month, the year. Happy new decade. Rah!